The Northern Territory government received advice from the federal government that Jenana Gusmao was on an aeroplane from, I think, Brisbane to Darwin, and that he had been allotted the highest classification in terms of his safety that the Commonwealth can apply. And from the point of view of what that meant to the Territory was that we had to find somewhere that he could stay that met that classification, that security classification.
Jenana Gusmao, the president of the East Timorese resistance movement, is resting at an undisclosed location in Darwin. John Thompson reports he left Indonesia after apparently receiving death threats.
The 52-year-old president of the National Council of Timorese Resistance and his entourage were whisked away from the airport, avoiding the large contingent of waiting media. Northern Territory government spokesman is giving few details of where Mr. Gusmao is staying, except to say he's being accommodated at an undisclosed location here.
Now, having the highest security classification meant that we couldn't just rent a unit and place him in there. If we had a unit, we had to occupy the whole floor so that there would be no other members of the public or residents of that building that entered that floor. So that created some enormous problems for us. And given that he was on an aeroplane, we only had a couple of hours to find out where to place him when he arrived. So we began the search, and of course the police were involved, and we sat around, I think it was a Sunday morning, and I ended up suggesting to some of my staff, and I think we had one or two staff from the Chief Minister's office, that we went down to Cullen Bay and had a meal and worked out what we could do with this fellow, given that he'd, you know, just been released from 20 years in prison or thereabouts, two decades. He wasn't going to probably take kindly to being secreted away somewhere.
So obviously one of the options would be put him into a police cell or some type of jail cell. Is that what ended up happening?
No. We didn't even think of that. We thought of private residences. We explored different sort of, you know, fishing lodges and all that sort of thing, but there are other people there. So we sat down around a table in a restaurant at Cullen Bay. It was quite ironic in that there were six or eight of us sitting around a table trying to work out what to do with Jenana Gusmao, and we were surrounded by national and international journalists who were here for that story and that story alone. Little did they know that we were in the midst of their thoughts as to how they could make the news. To the left, right, and behind us and in front of us, there were tables full of other journalists. All had their cameras and recorders and, you know, sort of video cameras all set to go. And obviously they were waiting for news as to what was going to happen with Jenana Gusmao and when he arrived in Darwin. So it was just extraordinary to be in that situation. And we had all the news that they wanted and they didn't know that we had it.
Mr. Gusmao's been in hiding for his own protection since arriving in Darwin on Sunday. The federal government and the United Nations have been communicating with him. Other leaders in the CNRT will be coming to discuss using Darwin as a base for a government in exile.
Mr. Ramos Horta, meanwhile, says he's awaiting instructions from the East Timorese independence leader Jenana Gusmao before going home.
I will return as soon as this is advisable, that is to say, as soon as Jenana Gusmao, the resistance leader, advised me to return. I certainly would like to return, the sooner the better, but I remain only under instructions from Jenana Gusmao.
So anyway, we worked out that possibly the best place to put him might be Coburg Peninsula in the National Park. I formerly worked for the Conservation Commission. I knew the ranger who was out there at the time, so I phoned him. And I said, Mark, is there anyone in the house, the spare house? He said, no, it's vacant. I said, OK, well, there's someone coming to stay in it. And, of course, he asked who it was, and I explained that I couldn't tell him. However, that the police task force would be out in a couple of hours and they'd be sort of taking control of the area, and he could follow their instructions from then on. The aircraft subsequently landed in Darwin. There was an enormous bevy of journalists, as you can imagine, both national and international, all waiting in the arrivals hall for Xanana Gusmão to come and speak to them. But, of course, we whisked him away from the tarmac area, actually, straight out of the aircraft, which rather upset them to, you know, a high degree, as you can realise that.
So the plane flies from Brisbane into Darwin, is that right?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was Brisbane.
And and the risk for this point for Xanana Gusmão is there's some concern that there could be an attack on his life. There could be an assassination attempt.
I don't know that that was the case, but certainly from the point of view of the federal government, they wanted to ensure that he would be safe. Now, the problem that they had was that he wasn't a head of state. If he was from another government, an international government, they would have taken responsibility for him. But as he wasn't a head of state or a member of a government, the responsibility falls to the state or territory wherever this person might be going on these occasions. So it fell to us.
You whisked him away from the airport off the tarmac. How do you then get him to the Coburg Peninsula?
Straight into a charter aircraft, and he was off to Coburg. Now, you can understand that, you know, if you or I were in that position, you might be somewhat aggrieved, because what he had in mind, of course, was to go straight to the evacuation centre on McMillan's Road, where all of his people were, that is the evacuated Timorese people, and there were thousands of them, and that was his wish. So I had to explain to him that he was classified by the federal government to an extent that we had to look after him and he had to be held in a private location. He took that exceedingly calmly, you know, for someone who had been in prison for a couple of decades and now was going to be sort of virtually, you know, secreted away somewhere for an unknown time. I couldn't give him a time as to how long it would take for us to organise alternative accommodation in Darwin, and that was done subsequently. But he was taken out to Coburg, and I had a long talk to him. We had him there, I think, for 3 or 4 days. It might have been about the fourth day that he came back into Darwin, and I went out every day to talk to him. He was just an amazing fellow, you know, sort of so understanding as to the circumstances that I had placed him in. Still, though, concerned that he hadn't got to see his people, and they were expecting him to arrive, and of course he hadn't. And he just took it all so calmly. Not so calmly were the folk from the United Nations, who accused me of being a member of some little provincial government that had no right to be hiding Xanana Gusmão from the United Nations, who were solely responsible for him in their eyes.
Well, why were we hiding him when the United Nations were there?
Well, simply because it was a federal government responsibility. And if you're in those circumstances, and given the tensions that existed in Timor, I guess that, you know, you reflect on that and you think, well, it was the right decision at the time. The last thing you would want would be for Xanana Gusmão to come to some sort of grief when he was the responsibility of the federal government. So that was where it all sort of led to. I went out there, it must have been the second or third day, and he was walking on the beach. The police were quite concerned because, you know, he's walking on the beach and, you know, there are crocodiles in the area. They're responsible for his well-being, and they did a terrific job, the task force. They looked after him well and very discreetly. But here was this man who we were locking up after he'd been locked up for a couple of decades, and I had a talk to him, and he'd been on the beach. He'd sort of waded a little in the water, just, you know, up to his ankles or something. And I asked him how he was going, and he said, "Today is the first time that I felt a free man. It was just almost a chilling statement to think that here you were with someone who was locked up for so long and you were virtually keeping them in captivity, yet he was so forgiving. But on the other hand, just walking along the beach at Coburg Peninsula in that pristine environment, freedom had met him that day. I think it laid the foundations for good relationships with East Timor. I don't know that we've taken sort of particular advantage of that. Only a couple of years ago, I was at Darwin Airport and out the back having a cigarette with someone from the, I think, the Territory Health Department. He was here for health reasons, was Shanana Guzmao. We embraced. I apologised to him again for keeping him locked up, and he was just as grateful as ever and as graceful, and just accepted the circumstances as they were at the time.